long time, but I don't know how beneficial this is going to be.
Oh, well, I think that the work that you did do when you were still active is still very important, and we're I'm eager to to get that down in the record. So I think...
Well, do you want to briefly start with my college work, or...
Yeah, I think so. Let me start even earlier than that. You were born in 1902, I believe.
In 1902.
In Maryland. And
yes.
One, I would like to get to the University of Maryland years, but I'd like to know a little bit more about your childhood and the origins of your interest in science.
Well, my parents were married in 1899, and they lived on a farm near Hagerstown. They were what you might refer to in the South as sharecroppers. For instance, they gave half of the wheat and half of the corn that they got, and they could build up their implements and so on, and their livestock and everything like that off of their share of the crop. The man that owned the farm owned a larger farm. Now, this was only about 40 acres, and he owned a larger farm of roughly 200 acres. And he decided, after they had lived there and farmed for a while, that he wanted to change farms with them. And going to sort of a retirement. His son lived close to the place that he was going to move into, so my father changed farms with him and went onto the larger farm. This man, I was born on the first farm, and I was born in a log cabin. That was all that they had to live in while my father was there. It had one room log cabin, but in those days they built a brick house over the log cabin for warmth, you see. Mm-hmm. And that's what this man did. He moved with his son for a year, and built his brick house, which he wanted to retire in. Over the log cabin, and the log cabin still remains, but covered over with brick. The chimney's on the outside yet. I went by with my sons just about 2 years ago, and we stopped a little bit there, and it's the same. So that my father farmed that for about 6 or 7 years, and then he went on to the larger farm for about 8 years. And then he had accumulated enough stock and machinery and so on so that he could buy his own farm. And he bought a farm in the middle of a Mennonite section. We happen to be another religion than that. And they were almost all of his neighbors were Mennonites. And I went to school for 2 years. It was a town called Morganville. It was only 1 mile south of the Mason-Dixon line. When my time came for high school, my father wanted me to be a farmer, and I didn't care so much for that. My mother wanted me to go on and get a little bit more education. So in those days, if you completed the eighth grade of your country school, you had the privilege of going in and taking the final exams of the first year of high school with the high school students. And if you passed, you could go on, you could miss the first year of high school and go on starting in the second year. Well, it so happens that when we got to the eighth grade, we only had three students left in the school. Another was a boy. He was about I would say about as capable as I was in things, but he wouldn't go in and take the exam. But he went to high school, and I passed the exam, and I missed the first year of high school. which made it a little difficult for me. When I took my sophomore year in high school, was well, it was the same as all of the other students. We had only had one type of lessons in high school. That is, we weren't divided into the academic and commercial at that time. Mm-hmm. In the junior year and the senior year, I took commercial in high school. I had no chemistry, I had no physics when I went to college.
Really?
When I went down to the University of Maryland, my father took me down a few days before summer school was to start to see about me entering there. He wanted me to go back to the farm, and my mother wanted me to continue on with schoolwork if I could get into the University of Maryland. The registrar at the University of Maryland was looking for students. It was the year after the war, year following the First World War. And he said that I should come to summer school, and that if I took a few of the courses which he would outline, one was in mathematics, another was in English. Mm-hmm. I took those, and I got good grades in. I went around and asked him after the summer was finished, what about coming to regular college? He says, well, we'll overlook everything and you can come to college.
So this was 1919?
This was in 1919. And I had, as I was telling Dean Mortick out here before you came in, that in college, I decided first I was going to take chemical engineering. I don't know why I decided on that. And after the first year, I changed it to regular chemistry. But we had laboratories in those days. And in the general chemistry laboratory, I didn't know what a beaker was. I didn't know what a test tube was. I had to ask the man working next to me, because he had it in high school. And I had nothing like that. So I brought to Dean Mortick, I brought a copy of my grades.
Hmm.
I don't know if you want to see that or not after we finish.
Sure, that would be very interesting. Before you say more about your college years, when you grew up on the farm, had your parents had any experience with science? Were there any books around?
No, there was no experience. And when I went to high school, I forgot to mention this. I had to walk for 2 miles. To get a train, then I took a train for 4 miles, and then I walked another mile to high school. That's the conditions under which I went to high school for the 3 years I was in there.
That's, well, you certainly got exercise.
And in the winter time, when there was snow, I had to leave at around 6:30 in the morning, because the train left at 7:15. It was almost always on time. So I had to leave to be able to be there in time for it.
So you didn't have you hadn't had any, you said you hadn't had any science in high school, and had you been reading books, or just had you?
No. The registrar wanted to know, after I finished the summer school, he wanted to know what course I wanted to take. Well, at that time, I thought chemical engineering would be as good as anything to sign up for.
And you don't remember why you thought that?
No. I have no idea as to the reason for that.
But so we're back in your chem lab, and you
in the chem lab. Then I took organic chemistry. Mm-hmm. I got very interested in organic chemistry. It was given in my junior year. I was told by someone that had taken it before that was one of the hardest subjects that I would be subjected to. So we used the Norris book. I bought the Norris book, and I went completely through that during the summer.
Hmm.
So that when I went back, it was just like rolling off a log. That is organic chemistry. And the same way with laboratory. I got interested in the laboratory work. Then I took, we had a new organic chemistry teacher come in my senior year, and I took advanced organic chemistry there, which wasn't required of me.
Mm-hmm. Who were your teachers for organic
chemistry? That was Karesh from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
He came there, and he stayed. The first year, when I worked on my master's degree, I had to take my master's degree in colloidal chemistry with Neil Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
Because Karesh only had the one fellowship, and I needed a fellowship to get some money to go to school on, because I couldn't talk my parents into supporting me for more than undergraduate work.
Mm-hmm. Did you have brothers and sisters also?
I had two sisters, two younger sisters.
And did they go on to college?
No. The one died of cancer. She was about 35 or something like that when she died. The other went to high school.
Mm-hmm. But your parents did have other children to support. So
yes, they had others, and they were interested in making the farm produce as much as they could. So that I felt that after I finished undergraduate work, that it would be necessary for me to more or less support myself. And there was no fellowships in organic chemistry. The man that had the fellowships in organic chemistry, his name was Ben Scher. And he got his doctor's degree after I had worked with Gordon for a year. And then there was available an opening for a fellowship for my second year of graduate work. And I did that with, I took that with Karesh.
Do you recall what texts and the sort of topics that Karesh had in the advanced organic course that you took with him?
No, we just had to look up in he went from one lecture to the next. He would vary his course. He would tell us to look up the so-and-so's work.
I see.
And things of that nature, because we didn't have much of a library at the University of Maryland. See, University of Maryland, when I went there, we only had 350 students. Hmm. And now it's around 60,000 or somewhere of that nature.
It's a little different, yeah.
And at the end of the year, Karesh told me that I had done enough work for my doctor's degree, but I'd have to take some academic courses, some physical chemistry and things like that. I said, oh, the hell with it. And so I never got my doctor's degree. He accepted my thesis. I wrote it up, and he accepted it and signed it, and the Penn State room up here has a copy of it, yes.
Was that the work that you published on organic radicals with him?
Yes, organic radicals.
Yeah, here's the... and also, I noticed there was another paper that you'd done with Gordon in...
yeah,
that must have been your master's degree.
That was on my master's degree, and the other one was on my doctor's degree. But then I went with the Naval Powder Factory. I was there for all about 7 months. I went there. You see, jobs were a little bit hard to get in those days, and I went there with the idea that I could look around.
Mm-hmm.
I went out. Karesh suggested, made a few suggestions to me. One of them was to go out to Akron and to look around to, with the rubber companies. I remember going to Firestone and Goodrich. At Akron, but I wasn't interested in that. Then I also went up to the Naugatuck Chemical Company in Connecticut, I think it is, and looked up there. But I looked at several places. Then
come in.
Oh, you're
there.
I'm here. Here.
So you went up to Naugatuck Chemical Company?
Yes, but I was interested in any of those. And I had gotten married at the fore part of the summer. So that it was necessary for me to look around. My wife was a school teacher, and she stayed at her home then until I could get located down on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. And we would meet in Washington occasionally.
Mm-hmm. What year was this that you got married?
25. Then, towards the end of the year, towards the end of 25, I heard that the Ethyl Gasoline Corporation was starting a laboratory up in Yonkers. And I wrote to them. And I was very disappointed when I went there, because it was nothing but an old garage that they were converting it into a laboratory. See, Ethyl Gas had just started their production, and they had just discovered that additives to gasoline would be helpful in preventing the knock. So,
was this laboratory at a production plant?
No, there was no production plant there. They found that there was a garage that was available. And they converted it into laboratories, the first floor. But down on the second floor, there was a few rooms on the second floor that they could enter into steps that went down. And one of the sets of steps was back in the laboratory. They assigned me the laboratory clear at the end of the building. And the only reason that I was hired, I figured later out, the only reason I was hired was because of the fact that I had worked with Karesh on metallic organics.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see, they were using lead tetraethyl as an additive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went there and my wife joined me a few days after I went up. I went with them on the 1st of February, 26.
Before we, I'd like to ask you some more about ethyl gasoline and the work you did there. What sort of work did you do at the Naval Powder Factory? That must have been in late 24 and early 1925?
It was in 25, late 25. It was just analysis, just routine things. A chemist wasn't needed for the things that I did. No research of any kind. It was just merely a place for me. It was a place to look around, and I wasn't getting much money. $1,800 I was getting, which was a lot of money in those days.
Yeah. Well, how much was your fellowship? Do you recall that?
With Karesh was able to get me $1,000 fellowship.
Mm-hmm. So it was the job in Naval Powder was a little bit more than that. But
yes,
still was. And another question that occurred to me was that were the rubber companies interested in the work on organic radicals as well? Is that why Karesh suggested that you go talk to them?
No, I don't think it was. They didn't seem they wanted me to work on rubber, and I wasn't interested in that. Well, at Ethyl Gas, the head of the Ethyl Gasoline Corporation was Graham Edgar, and he was a physical chemist that they got from University of Virginia. And I asked him what I was to work on after I got there, and to begin with, he raised my salary to $2,600.
Hmm.
And he said, "Oh, metallic organics of some kind." Said, "Whatever you want to." He said, "We'll run downstairs." They set up a bunch of Delco motors with bouncing pins in them, I think they had about a half dozen down there, motors. They had two boys running those. Well, thank you.
Thanks. Oh, there's some right here. Thanks again. So you would make up a batch of a new metallic organic, and then they try it. They add it to the gasoline and try it in the test motor.
Yes.
I'll do that.
Oh, I was doing it the wrong way. Thank you. Well, I got acquainted with the boys downstairs. I was the organic chemist. They had, a physical chemist there. He was working on various gasolines and burning them and seeing what compounds he would get out of them.
Was that George Callinger?
No. George Callinger got the job at Ethelgas because of the fact that he published a book on metallic organics at MIT or someplace like that. He was a Belgian.
So the physical chemist was someone else.
Yes, the physical chemist. His name was Rowan. I have never seen any publications of his.
So there were four chemists then: you, Graham Edgar, Callinger, and Ron.
Yes. Well, eventually they got another fellow working on metallic organics from a fellow named Gamble from he was also from University of Maryland, but he was back of me several years back. Well, I went downstairs. I could hear the knocking of these motors running downstairs. And after I was there working on metallic organics for a period, well, maybe a month or something like that, one day one of the boys said that we're having trouble down here. He said, if we had something of a standard gasoline that wouldn't evaporate and change its properties, we could call that the standard, but if it evaporates a little bit, any gasoline that we have that evaporates a little bit, it changes the knocking in the motors by the volatile material going off. Well, I told him, I asked them, how about making a hydrocarbon that would have a constant boiling? And they said, good. So I made some normal heptane. And the boys, I made, about a quart or something like that, or about a liter. It knocked so badly that it blew the bouncing pin out of the Delco motor that they were using. So I told him I would try making another one. And the easiest one that I could make was an octane that melted, that boiled about the same temperature as the heptane did. They ran that in the motor, and gosh, they got no knock at all. So I decided then that I had the problem solved. That the heptanes, because it had an odd number of carbon atoms, knocked, and the octane having an even number didn't knock at all, until I made normal octane, and that knocked as bad as the heptane. Then, right away on the first two compounds that I made, we made the standard testing gas. But by mixing together in different portions, that is 90 octane or 92 octane or whatever it is, because they both boil at approximately the same temperature.
So you, did you continue work and find out
then I continued on. I made all of the heptanes, and about two-thirds of the octanes. I was working on the octanes when I quit. And towards the fall of the second year, oh, I got a raise to $3,200 there at the end of the first year. And towards the fall of the second year, I had a visitor that came up. He said that he had some business in New York, but I was working on heptanes, and he wanted to find out about heptanes. It was Frank Whitmore, who eventually became dean of the school here at Penn State. And he stayed about a half a day in my lab. He wanted to know what everything was, what I was doing now. And so I went over everything with him. I had about a half dozen Grignards there in 5-liter flasks going at the same time. And he was quite impressed about what I was doing. And when he left, he said, "You know, if you're ever looking for a job, let me know." So that came in later on. That was the reason that I came to Penn State then. So
had he known your work from the literature, or
no? I had never published anything, but he had heard that I was working on hydrocarbon, and he was very interested in hydrocarbon, because after I had been at Rockefeller Institute and came over here, I found that almost all of his laboratory work was on hydrocarbons. Well, he called me then on the phone a little bit later on. A few weeks later or something like that. And there was an organic symposium out at Columbus, Ohio. And he was wondering whether I was going to Columbus. And if I was, whether I would bring along a hydrocarbon, a small amount in a test tube or something. So I asked Edgar whether I could go out to this meeting in Ohio that Whitmore suggested I come out to it. And Edgar said, "Sure, go ahead." Well, one of Whitmore's friends was at the meeting, Conant of Harvard. And Conant had been trying to produce hexamethylethane. Hexamethylethane is a product that boils at 108 and it melts at 105. There's only 3 degrees difference in the boiling and the melting point. So when Whitmore came up, I showed him. I had a distilling flask there. I think about 500 grams or something like that in it. And I showed, and he told me that his friend at Harvard was trying to get his hands on some of it. He had some students working on it up there, and he wasn't ever able to produce any quantity more than about a gram or something like that. So Whitmore asked whether at this Columbus meeting whether I brought the material along, and I told him yes, and I pulled it out of the pocket, a test tube of it. He said, "Well, we'll have dinner together." And we had I had dinner with Conant and Whitmore and some others at there was a table of eight around there. So Whitmore asked me to give him this material, and he said, he asked Conant, "Well, did you ever see this amount of hexamethylethane before?" And Conant was greatly surprised. Well, I went back to Ethyl Gasoline Corporation. And shortly after I got back, I got a letter from P.A. Levine of Rockefeller Institute. I never heard of Rockefeller Institute before, and I never heard of P.A. Levine. And he asked me, he said that they were having trouble making a certain compound. And he was wondering whether I could make the compound for him.
Excuse me one second.